Well, welcome to ARCUS informational webinar here. This is Sarah Bartholow. I work for ARCUS, and we'll explain a little bit more about who we are if you don't already know. As people are signing in, we will get started, and please feel free to ask questions in the chat box as we move along. Our webinar today is titled Integrating Arctic Research, A Roadmap for the Future, about ICARP, the International Conference on Arctic Research Planning. Today's Wednesday, the 18th of February, 2015. It's 8 a.m. here in Alaska, and later, I'm sure, where most other folks may be. We have Dr. Volker Reckold and Dr. Larry Hintman as our speakers. And I'm going to move along through our slides here with a quick introduction to our platform. So you should be seeing slides moving ahead of you on the screen. And just a quick second here, did someone else just join by phone?
Jonathan Punsack.
Wonderful. Thanks for joining. And did someone else just join by phone?
Christopher Featherston from Science and Technology for DHS.
Welcome. Great. So we're just getting started. This is Sarah Barcelo from the ARCUS program here. We are on the sort of second slide. If you're following by the PDF, it's a photo of our system here, the Blackboard Collaborate system. So folks should see slides changing on their screen. Right now it's a tutorial, so the slides will be on the right. We're not using video at this point, just to limit our bandwidth and make this presentation easy. On the left, you'll see a participant panel, so you can see who has joined us. And there is a talk button as well. You can press that to speak and press it again when you're done. If you'd like to ask a question, there is a little hand icon. Makes it easy for us online if folks want to ask a question. You can put that up, and we can call on you. We should have questions at the end. There'll be time for that. And there's also a chat box in the bottom left. And so if you have a question there, you can, or a comment, you can type it in there. We have our presenters are online, as well as Helen Wiggins from the ARCUS program. So folks that are on the phone, if you do have a question, you don't have the option to write it in the chat box or anything, so feel free to interrupt if you need to, but we'll try and keep questions towards the end. If you're having any trouble, speak up as well on the phone there. For participants that are online, it'd be great if you could type into the chat box your name, affiliation, and if you do have anybody participating with you at the same location, it'd be great for us to get a number on who's participating. The next slide is about questions. Again, during the presentation, you can type in the chat box in the bottom left of your screen. Or at the end of the presentation, you can raise your hand. We'll call on you and direct the questions to our speakers. You click the talk button to speak and click it again when you're done. For folks on the phone, I'll relay what's happening in the chat box if it's pertinent information. Folks are introducing themselves. We've got Lee Cooper, Jackie Grimmar, Andres Huber, Roberto Delgado, Sarah Bowden. And we'll try and capture that all for folks as well. Moving on to the ARCUS slide here, so just a quick introduction to the folks that are hosting this webinar right now. The Arctic Research Consortium of the United States is a catalyst for interdisciplinary thinking, acting, and education, leading to the development of highly collaborative partnerships. So it's a nonprofit consisting of institutions organized and operated for educational, professional, and scientific purposes. ARCUS is an ICARP III steering committee member offering support for outreach to the public, educators, and the science community. So that's just a really basic understanding of who we are and why we are helping to participate in ICARP III. We've got Helen Wiggins online from ARCUS as well, so feel free to ask her questions about ARCUS if need be. And at this point, I am going to turn it over to our speaker. First is Volker, and I'm going to your slide that is our current ICARP partners, because we have done our introduction slide already.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. Let me start with thanking ARCUS for hosting this webinar. So ARCUS joined the ICARP process last year, and of course we are very pleased that we can use the excellent facilities that ARCUS has, not only the webinar. We will also have a paper in the Witness the Arctic, I guess, in the next issue. and a couple of other things that ARCUS is doing to support the ICARP process. I want to show you this slide and start with this slide, actually, because first of all, it shows you how many organizations and groups are interested in Arctic research, and it's getting more and more each year. And on the other hand, of course, to show you that all these groups are partners of the ICARP process, so that all these various groups decided to help us defining the priorities for Arctic research that I guess everyone wants to know. So, and if you look at the various logos here on that screen, I won't go through everything, just a few examples. You have scientific organizations like IAS, of course, like the Association of Arctic Social Sciences, CLIC, the Climate Tribes here. You also have Arctic Council working groups like EMAP and CAF, partners in ICARP. And you have the permanent participants of the Arctic Council, so the Indigenous peoples through the Arctic Council Indigenous Peoples Secretariat as a partner in the process. But we're also looking into the other pole and working closely with SCAR, the Scientific Committee on Antarctic Research, and I will come to that, I think, at the end of the presentation in a bit more detail, why this is important for us also to look at the other pole. So this slide just gives you an idea of who is participating in the ICARP and which organizations are on the steering group of ICARP. And if we go to the next slide, which shows you actually what ICARP 3 is. So it's meant to be some kind of a framework, and as I said, to identify Arctic research priorities for the next decade. That's one thing. The other thing, of course, and that also explains why the various groups are all on board, it's also something which is related to coordinating the various Arctic research agendas. So, of course, each organization has its own ideas and agendas and research plans, and an important objective of ICARP 3 is to coordinate these various things and to agree on the most important questions. Of course, ICARP is also about informing policymakers, people who live in the Arctic, and this is why it's so important for us to have the permanent participants of the Arctic Council and the Indigenous peoples involved in the process from the very beginning, which is also related, of course, to building constructive relationship between the producers, so the scientists, and the users of knowledge, which are, of course, also the policymakers. If we go to the next slide. So what ICARP does not do, ICARP from the beginning decided not to undertake the development of new science plans. There are so many science plans out there, and we felt that it would be much more useful to rather look at the various things, integrate them, and extract the key questions. And of course, ICARP 3 builds on the outcome of ICARP 2, which was held about 10 years ago, and produce science plans, and of course it also looks into the outcome of the International Polar Year, which was partly connected to what ICARP 2 did. And then it will complement the existing activities with processes to identify and fill gaps that we feel need attention. We go to the next slide. So the process is governed by a steering committee, and we invited each ICARP 3 partner organization to appoint one person to sit on the steering committee. So we currently have about 25-30 partner organizations. So, and here you see a photo of the last meeting of the steering group, which was held in Potsdam last November. And this steering group is, of course, responsible for getting the various pieces together and extracting the key messages at the end of the ICARP process. Next slide, please. So ICARP is not just one conference, though the title is conference. It's a process or a program. So it started with a formal launch at the Arctic Science Summit Week 2014 in Helsinki, and will culminate in the final conference in Japan next April. And in between, there is a series of meetings, events, and activities that are all feeding into the ICARP outcome, the ICARP products at the end. And various different things organized by all the ICARP 3 partners and others interested in contributing. So also national contributions and events at other conferences that are feeding into the iCart 3 program. So next slide. So I don't want to go into detail into the activities, so including workshops, writing team meetings, conference sessions, town hall meetings, outreach and capacity building events, because all of these are available on the iCart 3 website, and I ask issued two newsletters, one in spring and one in fall last year, with kind of updates on what the various activities have been doing or will be doing. They will be grouped into four, or they are grouped into four themes. The first we call climate system and transformations, the second societies and ecosystems, one more broader theme on observing technology, logistics and service, and finally one on outreach and capacity building. So, and over the last year, there were dozens of activities, events that are all feeding into the iCart 3 outcome. So if we go to the next slide. I think at the end, the question is, what will be the outcomes of iCart 3? And as I said, there will be various activities, and all these activities will produce individual reports or publications or whatever. But what we are currently working on with the steering group is extracting the key messages from all these reports, activities, summaries, to compile some kind of a consensus statement that we want to present at the Arctic Science Summit Week, the iCart 3 final conference in Japan in April. And that includes the commonly agreed priorities and a roadmap how to address these priorities in the future. And of course, all iCart partners are playing a role because they're all sitting on the iCart steering committee and are all involved in producing these documents. So, of course, we thought about the audience from the very beginning. Who's interested in such a product or in these kind of priorities and roadmap? Of course, it's the science funders and the decision makers. They want to know what the scientific community believes are the biggest questions that need to be addressed. Policymakers, of course, but the user community is much broader. So, of course, it includes indigenous and local people, the scientific committee as such, and of course, very important, the next generation. And here we are very pleased to work closely with the Association of Polar Early Career Scientists, APACS, because at the end, of course, it will be the next generation that has to address the questions in about 10 years. If we go to the next slide. The one thing that we have been thinking on from the very beginning is how can these iCart activities feed into a potential International Polar Partnership Initiative, IPPI, which stems from the original idea that WMO presented some years ago already on an international polar decade. And of course, we are hoping that such an International Polar Partnership Initiative could be at least one mechanism to address some of the biggest questions that we identify in iCart 3. And here also the Antarctic becomes important because SCAR, our counterpart for the Antarctic, had a very similar process last year. Well, let's say a very similar objective. The process was different, so they used the horizon scan method to identify the biggest science questions for Antarctic research over the next decades. And now we are in the position, when iCart 3 will be over, to compare our notes with the Antarctic and identify polar research priorities for potential International Polar Partnership Initiative. I think the next slide is already my last slide. We go to the next one. So all this information is available on the iCart 3 website. It's simply icart.is.info. We also have a Facebook and a Twitter page, and you can email directly to icart@isinfo. So on the website, you find reports and summaries and abstracts of the various iCart activities. You find information on the themes, on the participants, and it's also linked to the final conference in Japan, where many of the activities will be presented in sessions, keynote presentations, and other activities held in Toyama in April. So, and with that, I want to end and give back to you, Sarah. I don't know if you want to have questions now or if Larry just continues.
Sure. This is Sarah Barcelo from ArcGIS. We had a couple people join us. And so if you missed any of the beginning slides, there's a PDF available in your inbox. So let us know if you need anything else. But we do have a question in the chat box here. Is there a way that ICARP 3 consensus statement will or can also feed into planning for ASSW 2016? And I'll direct that question to both.
Yes, of course, I think so. I mean, we just start planning the Arctic Science Summit Week 2016. And of course, we are hoping that what comes out of ICARP will also feed into that planning. One thing that we will have at the Arctic Science Summit Week in Fairbanks 2016 is the Arctic Observing Summit. And of course, observing is an important element also of ICARP 3. So from that point of view, I think there it will influence the conference planning and will feed into that conference planning.
All right, this is Sarah again. Are there any other questions at this point? We can also move forward. I'll just give one more second if people are thinking through some questions. Okay, I'll leave it at that for now, but I will turn it over to Dr. Larry Hinsman for a look at sort of the, what it means to the Arctic research community.
Thanks, Sarah, and thanks, Volker. That was a real good summary. I think, you know, it's good to have this discussion now as far as looking forward to what ICARP 3 can mean to U.S. researchers and how we can take this and build upon it and take advantage of it. And I think a good way to understand the value of the ICARP process is to look back at ICARP 1 and 2 and see what came out of those. So ICARP 1 was held in Dartmouth in 1995, so it'll be 30 years, well, 20 years ago now. And so it was a big meeting at the time in that it was the end of the Cold War, science in the Arctic was really changing a lot at that point. And I guess and then looking forward to ICARP 2, that was held in November of 2005. And it was built upon ICARP 1. Sarah, can you go to the next one, please? So ICARP 1 was, like I said, that was an interesting time in that it was the end of the Cold War. The international science was really opening up at that point. Many people saw the complexities of Arctic science as far as understanding that that the Arctic really does behave as a system, and that we have to look at the interactions of all the various complexities and intricacies of all the linkages among the various processes. And it was just obvious at that point that that's just too big of a challenge to be tackled by any single nation or even small groups of nations or small groups of researchers working together. And we really had to collaborate and work together to try and best utilize our resources, best share our observations and our understanding so that we could really advance the knowledge of the Arctic system and move it forward into predictive capabilities. In the late 90s, the concept of climate change was grasped or was understood and recognized, but it wasn't as dominant as it is in these days. And so much of the ICARP 1 was really focused on trying to understand just the basics, the baseline of the Arctic. So, but it was a good time to acknowledge that the Arctic does behave as a system, and so it was a really good opportunity to bring together various disciplines. So in this meeting, there was about 250 scientists from all over the world, and including a large participation from Russia, which was a great boom at that point. The conference came out with two documents, and I think it's important to know what these are, and that one was entitled Arctic Systems, Natural Environments, Human Interactions, and Nonlinear Processes. And so even then, 20 years ago, we were really focused on understanding the Arctic as a system. And a lot of the changes that we're seeing today or focusing on today were not really recognized or not really identified, but they were, I guess, tentatively identified as being important. Going on to the next slide, please, Sarah. So, as I mentioned, so ICARP really did focus on Arctic systems, but it was in this meeting that we really talked a lot about feedbacks and thresholds and how changes that accumulate may have dramatic impacts. And as I mentioned, it was not necessarily just focused on the changes in Arctic climate change, but it was really focused on opening up the Arctic as far as all the human impacts, cumulative impacts, development, and the impacts on society. Many of the things that we talked about now, as we assume are very important, very common, were really not so recognized and just introduced at that point. So I think it really served a good purpose for launching a lot of the research that followed from there. So the discussions of tipping points and discussions of thresholds, that really opened up a lot of avenues for scientific research in the following that meeting. Next slide, please, sir. So these are just a list of the themes that were identified going into ICARP 1. So I was at ICARP 1, I participated in ICARP 1 and ICARP 2. I was involved in the disturbance theme for ICARP 1. And this ICARP 1 was quite different than ICARP 2, and ICARP 2 is quite different than ICARP 3. And then ICARP 1 was really focused on trying to develop projects, to get people to work together, to invest in developing research programs to follow from that. And many of these projects, or these projects, were not really funded or not really launched immediately afterwards. But if you look at these themes, these 11 themes, you'll see that we've actually made great advancements in all of those since then. And so although some of these projects were not implemented as they were originally envisioned, they were eventually advanced and really moved ahead. And so I think ICARP 1 really did a lot to contribute to opening our eyes to what the important research questions were in the Arctic, identifying the gaps, and also kind of coming to grips with what a lot of the capabilities are, where our capabilities lie, and how we could collaborate across borders and across disciplines to really advance and take on some of these important topics. So I if we look through these 11 sessions, 11 themes, we can see that a lot of the projects that were implemented. So for example, the regional cumulative impacts of the Barents Sea. So the BASIS, the Barents Sea study, followed from that. And the Barents Sea BASIS project followed from that. The disturbance study that I mentioned, it was number 7, disturbance and recovery of the terrestrial ecosystems. That was never really implemented as a funded project, but there were there was a really good book that came out of this this effort, as far as all the research, the background effort that came into it, the synthesis of all the information that we had at that point, and just bringing the various people together to this meeting really resulted in a better understanding of the consequences of disturbance in the Arctic. And so I think we can look back at ICARP 1 in hindsight and say, yeah, that really was a success. And I think that that's important in this point, in that let's go forward one more. Sarah, can you advance, please? So ICARP 2 was quite different than ICARP 1. And I guess one of the things I wanted to say about ICARP 2 is that there was a huge effort. So ICARP 1 was really focused on developing projects and programs to implement. And that was hard to do, to get the funding agencies and the researchers and just everything aligned to get these into funded projects. And ICARP 2 is quite different in that what it did is it took on more of a process that developing science plans. So developing the science plans for hopefully implementation as they could through whatever methods available. And following ICARP 2, there was a lot of discussion about whether we're investing too much money and time into planning and not enough into the actual conduct of the science. And there was, you know, kind of a kickback, and we and to not do as much planning in the years following ICARP II. And I think that was a mistake, and I think that you know, we've got too far away from the planning and not enough visionary forward looking. And so I think we're getting back into more of that planning now with ICARP III, and I think that's a really good thing. But so ICARP II was proposed in 2003, and that was at the point when we were just completing the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment. The first Arctic Human Development Report was just being published, and the International Polar Year was just being discussed at that point. And so it wasn't really, it was an idea, but it wasn't near the concept of implementation yet. And so I think ICARP II really did a lot to help with coalescing the ideas that we needed for implementation of ICARP II. Unlike ICARP I, which was just sponsored by IASC, ICARP II had many partners, many programs, just as Volker just mentioned for ICARP III. And so it really was a broader consensus effort. And that was really good for the whole Arctic community, I believe. Also, as unlike ICARP I and ICARP III, ICARP II did really focus on developing these science plans. So next, Sarah, please. So these are just some of the themes from the ICARP II. I'm not going to go through and read all these, but like I said, well, just so we can advance. So sustainable development, indigenous peoples, coastal processes, and the deep central basin were the first four. Sarah, can you advance to the next one, please? And then the others you can read from here. And you can see again that science plans were developed for these 12 themes. And you could, if you look at these and you look back in hindsight, you can see where there was a lot of these themes were implemented. They were taken to fruition, not necessarily followed up by projects supported by IASC or any of these, any of the funders, or any of the participating partners, but implemented somehow. So this planning, this effort of identifying the important research questions, identifying where our capabilities were ripe to take on some of these challenges, really helped advance the science, and I think really moved us along in taking us where we are to today. Sarah, do you want to go forward to the next one, please? So I want to talk about just the value of planning. So this is what we need to think about right now, and that, you know, as I mentioned, after ICARP II, there was some kickback and some questioning on if that's the best way to invest our research monies in the effort of planning. And personally, I really do think it is a good investment. I really do think that it really helps us align our science with various nations. It helps us take best advantage of the talents and the expertise that we all have, and it really lets us use the capabilities for moving forward. Both ICARP I and ICARP II had intensive efforts going into the meetings where there were working groups or synthesis teams that put together a synthesis of where we were at that point and what the research questions were. And those synthesis documents were really helpful in justifying the science. And so many of the proposals that came after that were sent to various funding agencies with the referencing the ICARP I and ICARP II documents, saying that it was identified by the community that these are important research needs, and this is a consensus document that shows that we need to invest our research funds here. And so they did provide a lot of justification to the community and to the funding agencies to go forward with some of this research. Next, please, Sarah. And so, you know, do we still need to go forward with that? You know, do we have enough planning documents or research guides at this point to take us forward? And personally, I think planning is always helpful and is always useful. And with the advent of this extended warming and the interactions that we're seeing, and that the climate change is having a big impact on the Arctic, but also there's many interactions now with other processes going on, with the changes in demographics, the changes in economies, the changes in security. All of these are confounded, and so we really need to understand how these processes are interacting and then try and understand how we can best invest our own efforts and our limited research funds in how we can take apart these linkages and quantify them so that we can project how the system is going to change in the future and better prepare for that. Our communities need that, our nations need that, and the researchers need this information to help advance this this planning. So I think that the value of these international collaborations have really been demonstrated through the processes of the ICARP conferences. The sharing of resources, the sharing of facilities, and sharing of platforms, and more importantly, just the sharing of the understanding and the synthesis of information really helps us advance our capabilities and helps us get greater achievements with greater efficiency. Next, please, Sarah. So the benefits of participation. I hope that many of you here will be attending ICARP 3 because it's only as strong as the participants who are there. So there have been many working groups who have been working for the past year and longer preparing for ICARP 3 and to identify where the research needs are and what we can do to tackle them. But it's important that this is an event. We'll be presenting these needs at this meeting, but it's there for discussion and there for interpretation and how we can work together to identify what's important and where we do have the capabilities to attack some of these challenges. And this is just a process that will continue on after the conference, but it's at this conference that we can get everybody together and we can really rely on the wisdom of the group. And so I do hope that all of you are able to attend and that all of you are able to actively engage and participate in this meeting. So I think that with ICARP, with the focus on where we are today and then trying to understand where we need to go tomorrow, it'll really help us prepare for the changing Arctic and help us develop the science that we need to help our nations prepare and adapt. And that is my last slide, and I'll thank Sarah and Arcus for helping us put this together, and Volker for all his efforts on the steering committee, and the other members of the steering committee for really doing the lion's share of the work of helping to prepare for ICARP 3. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much for that presentation. That was great. I do want to just scroll back through the chat and share a few of the comments for folks that are on the phone. It also gives a chance for folks to kind of gather themselves, see if there's some questions out there, and I do see a few hands raised. So let's see. I was just mentioning a few statements that I really like the statement about opening up our eyes to the topics from the very beginning of the effort. And both I and Alexi were just mentioning it's a great synopsis of the sort of holistic view of ICARP, sort of the movement over time. One question in the chat, and then we'll go to live questions. Alexei Pavlov mentions, great insights in the history of ICARP. Thanks, Larry and Volker. I was wondering, what would ICARP 4 process look like? Maybe I'll go back to Volker and see if he has any first thoughts, and then over to Larry.
It's a good question, Alexei. You saw how the three ICARP things, how it changed over time. So the first ICARP was really kind of an IS thing, and the second one was very different because it also brought together many other partners, and the number of organizations, as I said in the beginning, and groups interested in Arctic research is constantly growing. So ICARP 2 was a bit different because it was right at the beginning of the IPY. And so, as Larry said, the outcome of ICARP 2 was different because many people are criticizing us for not producing any projects out of ICARP 2, but on the other hand, it directly fed into the planning of the International Polar Year, so that many of the ICARP 2 questions were addressed within the IPY. So now, with ICARP 3, we are using a different approach by not writing new science plans, but rather integrating what is there. And it's hard to see or hard to predict how this will look like in another 10 years. But one thing I think we are seeing is also in the ICARP that it's more moving away from only science to science for, let's say, society, to integrating indigenous and local people, making it useful for policymakers, and I think this will, for ICAR 4, probably even become more important.
Yeah, that was a good summary, Volker. I guess, you know, one thing I like about the ICARPs is that they are very in tune with the current conditions, the current situation. And so, you know, the ICARP 2 was quite different than ICARP 1 just because the times had changed so much then. And, you know, the ICARP 3, I think, is more receptive to the interactions of the various, you know, the global environment has changed so much now in the last 10 years as far as, you know, the conflicts we're seeing. And so it's really engaging a much broader perspective, whereas in ICARP 1, we really took on just trying to understand the baseline of what the Arctic was like. And so it's really difficult to project where the world is going to be in 10 years. And so I don't, you know, I can't do that, but I can say that if we do hold an ICARP 4, that I think it will be very much dependent upon what the situation is at that point. And you know, it'll help us to align what we have at that point with what our understanding is and help us take it forward from there. So that's a pretty poor answer, but I think it is really hard to project.
So I'm going to go to Kelly with a hand up there. So press the talk button down when you're ready to speak, and then press it again when you're done. We can ask.
Can you hear me? Great. Okay.
Sure can.
I have a question for Volker. If he could please comment on the status and intended trajectory of the IPPI development.
Great. And Kelly, could you just real quick introduce yourselves for folks on the phone, too, so we know who you are.
Okay. I'm Kelly Faulkner. I'm the Director of Polar Programs at the National Science Foundation.
Perfect. Thanks.
Yeah. A good question, Kelly. So, as I mentioned, the IPPI is something that stems from the idea that was born right after the IPY that we should kind of continue the IPY for another 10 years and to make it an international polar decade. But I think right from the beginning, we realized that this is not realistic in terms of the funding that went into IPY and in terms of the efforts that went into IPY. So I think we pretty quickly moved away from that idea of the decadal IPY into something we called the International Polar Partnership Initiative. With the main idea of having a mechanism for better coordinating our work or better making use of existing funding rather than expecting additional funding. And there's various communities quite some interest in such an activity. The Arctic Council, for example, is looking into such a thing. And of course, when we talk about ICARP, and when SCAR talks about HorizonScan, we see the potential of this IPPI to become a mechanism for implementing some of the ICARP 3 or the HorizonScan ideas. So there has been some planning ongoing over the last 2 years, but I would put it like this. There was also some reluctance because people wanted to see what comes out of SCAR's HorizonScan and ICARP's IS partners ICARP before developing that too much, actually. So, but it's still something which is on the table and still something that the science community is working on. If such an IPPI could become one of the mechanisms to implement some of the questions or some of the research needs that we identify with an ICARP and HorizonScan.
Thanks for that. Larry, any additional question or anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that's Volker covered quite well.
Great, thanks. So we've got a question from Helen Wiggins from ARCUS. Another organizational kind of question to help sort out all of the acronyms in the Arctic. What's the relationship of ICARP to the International Symposium on Arctic Research, ISAR-4, which is also being held at ASSW 2015? So this is great for folks that are familiar with what's happening, but maybe not completely engaged yet, so still trying to get their bearings. Can you guys comment on that? Maybe I'll go to Larry first. We'll turn it around.
Sure. So the ISAR meetings, International Symposium on Arctic Research, is being held. This is ISAR-4, and it's been held by the or organized by the Japanese Arctic Research Community. And I believe it's held every 2 years, and it's actually a long-standing meeting. Before that, they organized the GCCA. It was called Global Change Connections to the Arctic, and that was held, I think, every year for 7 years. And so the Japanese community has actually a really pretty well-developed, long-standing Arctic research consortium where they partner across many of the agencies there and many of the universities, and that was their conference that it was an international conference, and so there was a very large Asian participation and a good participation from the U.S. community. So this the ISAR meeting, it worked out very well as far as the linkage with the ASSW, the Arctic Science Summit Week this year, and it is distinct and separate from the ICARP meeting. So ICARP is really focused on Arctic research planning, where the ISAR is really a symposium on the accomplishments and demonstration of scientific research across the Arctic. And I guess maybe I'll just take one more second and follow up on Helen's previous question, in that she asked how ICARP 3 will feed into ASSW 2016. And actually, that's a good question, but it is something we're thinking a lot about. And we are, ASSW 2016, Arctic Science Summit Week 2016, will be held in Fairbanks next March. And we actually have been working with the organizers of ASSW 2015, and we will have a 2016 session during the meeting in Toyama, so that we can take community comments and ideas and help us develop the plans for 2016. Thanks.
Yeah, just add something on the ISAR-4 question. So
sure.
At the Arctic Science Summit Week, every 2 years we have the Science Symposium, and every other year we have the Arctic Observing Summit. And in Japan, it was decided to have the Science Symposium. And then, of course, the Japanese colleagues, they have their ISAR, which is every second year, as Larry's very already said. And when we realized that, and we tried to build the program for the Arctic Science Summit Week and try to integrate the ICARP, we thought that this is a wonderful opportunity to also have a platform for just scientific presentations, because it's sometimes hard to get scientists to a planning conference. And if you tell people it's an Arctic research planning conference, for some scientists that's not really that attractive. So, and we thought that bringing these two things together and using the ISAR as a platform for people to present their science, and at the same time do the science planning within ICARP, we found that this would be a good solution. So what we have now, we have a 4-day program, which is a mixture of both, let's say, standard scientific sessions with presentations and planning sessions within ICARP, and during 4 days at the Arctic Science Summit Week.
Perfect, thank you. We do have another question in the chat box, but I wanted to connect with folks that are out on the phone, give you a chance to speak up if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to share. And remember that your phone may be on mute, so press the mute button or *6 to speak and we can hear you. But let me give it a second to folks on the phone if they'd like to gather a question or two. All right. Folks on the phone, feel free to interrupt at any time as well. One more question here coming in. As an early career scientist, I'm wondering how the process of finding a consensus at ICARP3 will work. Will there be a large podium discussion, or is it more concentrated to a smaller working group? Maybe I'll start with Volker can start this time around.
Yes. Now, the idea is what we did so far within the steering group, we invited all the, those leading ICARP activities or ICARP programs over the last year. We invited everyone to come up with a short list of priorities from their activities, recommendations, priorities, whatever they believe should be covered in this consensus statement. And then within the steering committee, we will review all these contributions and put together a draft statement that we want to present at the beginning at the ICARP conference in Japan. And of course, this will be refined and considering what is discussed at the conference, so that after the conference, at the end, we will hopefully come to a conclusion and be able to present such a statement that has the buy-in from everyone who was involved in ICARP.
Volker, why don't you talk about the involvement of early career researchers in the various groups that are participating?
Yeah, I said that with APEX, the Association of Polar Early Career Scientists, we have a very, very strong partner for early career scientists, and APEX is involved in the ICARP process with lots of activities, with several activities. That's one thing. The other thing, of course, is that this is at least the case for ICE, but I believe also for many other organizations, that everything we're doing involves early career scientists. So we are trying for all the activities we are doing to involve early career scientists in the work. We just started with an ICE fellowship program. So we have ICE fellows supporting the work of our working groups. And I think for ICARP, we are pretty well set up in terms of integrating early career scientists.
And I guess one thing I'll just add, so one example of that is that, I've been involved in the freshwater synthesis that's been ongoing, and there are various components, which will be presented at ICARP3, and there are many components of that, and each of the components has a chair and a co-chair, and either the chair or the co-chair is an early career scientist in each of those, and so it's been very much guided and driven by the participation of the early career researchers. And so they are playing a big role throughout the whole conference.
Thanks for that. And it does look like we have a great question from Shauna Burnsilver. Shauna, if you'd like to ask your question live, you can press the talk button to speak, and it'd be great if you can share that one. Sean, I see that your microphone is sort of turned on, but we are not hearing your voice, unfortunately. Sorry about that. I will relay it. That's here in the chat box. Larry, you mentioned that after ICARP2, there was pushback against the strong focus on science planning. Is the alternative then a focus on project planning, as was true for ICARP1, or are there other foci or approaches that are being discussed already? For example, an emphasis on mechanisms to synthesize across existing research results?
So I think, we've evolved a lot in those since then, in that we really do see the value of syntheses. And so, in fact, NSF has had a program for a long time on synthesizing understanding, and they still do, actually, in many respects. But no, the kickback was that we were investing too much in planning and not enough in the actual collection of the data and actual conduct of the research on the ground, and I think that that was a little misplaced as far as the appreciation for how this examination of the research questions and the research needs and the gaps really helped guide the science and justify the science and help these funding agencies take their cases to secure secure resources to take to help support the science. And so I think it was just a little bit of a misplaced understanding of the value that was coming out of it. And I think that's been demonstrated in the last 20 years as far as where it's gone. And so I don't have, you know, I don't have a viable alternative to just good science planning. I think that's hugely important. And I think that it can be taken apart through these large conferences, but it also can be coordinated and organized by small workshops of people getting together and trying to put their ideas together and get the collaborations and cooperation needed that we can really advance these projects. And we see that is ongoing all the time. IASC has many working groups, and that each of those groups are facilitating planning amongst the working groups for many of the disciplines. And through those research planning efforts, then those ideas are taken to the funding agencies. And if the funding agencies and the reviewers see that as a value, then they do take it forward. I don't know, maybe I might ask Kelly if you're still on the line. Kelly Faulkner, can you please, what is the NSF, what do you think of these planning documents? Are they useful to you? Are they of value to you?
I am still here, and they're certainly of value. I think they're becoming even of more value in some respects, as in the case of constrained resources, we really do need to be sure we're partnering to the utmost in order to leverage what U.S. dollars do. And there's particular interest in this upcoming event, for example, because we would like to be sure that another activity, which is Arctic Council Ad Hoc Task Force to Enhance Science Cooperation in the Arctic, reinforces the community's efforts as opposed to reinvent them, and as we work towards setting up an agreement that's meant to help research move forward. The eight Arctic nations are intending to sign an agreement that enhances and facilitates science cooperation. So, I'm listening today in part because as we're pushing out on this agreement, we have preambular language saying recognizing efforts such as what I'm listening to today. it's partly why I asked the question about the IPPI as well. That raises another question for me, it would be changing the subject, but I think the bottom line answer to your question, Larry, is yes, it's important. It's probably at the moment of more importance than ever. And my question is a bit of a follow-on. Is there other fora? And I wanted Volker and you perhaps both to address how well you think planning efforts that WMO has spun up are integrated in the ICARP 3 thinking.
Okay, do you mind taking that?
Yeah, I can try. There are a couple of things that WMO is doing through its Executive Council on Polar Observations Research and Services. There's the Global Cryosphere Watch. There are plannings ongoing for an international the Year of Polar Predictions in 2018. And of course, we see all these kind of things related to ICARP, and also related to potential IPPI. Though WMO has not been extremely active within the ICARP process, we're still, of course, pretty well connected, particularly through this EC course, the panel on polar observations research and services. We have to see how these things come together over the next year. I do not expect that the ICARP 3 process will end at the conference in Toyama. There will be more things happening over this year and possibly next year. But of course, the conference is an important step towards coming to some kind of consensus statement. And I'm hopeful that WMO will participate and contribute to that.
Great, thank you for that. I do, for the sake of the transparency for folks on the phone, we had Shauna Brunsilver asking a question earlier, and she's from Arizona State University School of Human Evolution and Social Change, for folks on the phone to have that context. I think it's a really unique and great opportunity that we have sort of program managers and folks at NSF here in the dialogue about the process. And I think there's a lot of people mentioning in the chat box that this sort of holistic and big picture view is really helpful, sort of hearing the counter narratives and getting much more clear on the relationship between the different things that are happening in Toyama. So I think we're really getting somewhere here just to share the basic information. And that was the sort of point of the webinar. We have just 3 minutes left. I do want to respect folks' time, and perhaps we have meetings in the next hour to head off to. So I will say first, thanks so much to our presenters for taking the time and to our audience for taking the time out to engage in the conversation and to gather the information and understanding. The archive will be available shortly. I'll work on that this afternoon and hopefully be able to send that to all of you. All the folks who have registered will receive an archive of the event. We can stay on for a minute or two longer if there are other burning questions. Any folks out there on the phone want to jump in, or are you okay?
Yes, thank you. This is Joe Cassis at Marshall. I joined just a little bit late, but I'll catch up with Larry in terms of a side discussion on a couple of points. But this was very helpful in getting that 80,000-foot perspective of integration activities and some of the counterarguments of some of the things that are currently ongoing.
Super. Thanks, Joe.
Great. Yeah, and more praise coming through in the chat box. Thanks to organizers and presenters. The slide materials are useful. And after these discussions, we're convinced, Helen says, discussion, I'm convinced they need to be at the 2015 ASSWs. That's great, as she's helping sort of work out things for here at Fairbanks in 2016. So, folks, thanks so much. And I really wanted to thank you all for coming. Again, the archive will be out shortly. Please email ARCUS if you do have any questions about the event or other outreach opportunities that we can sort of help begin to share and have more of a dialogue like this in the future. So we'll be signing off shortly. Folks are saying thanks and very informative. Thanks for showing up. And we'll talk soon. Thanks so much to everyone.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, all. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.